En mörk oändlig
Ingmar. Welcome to Views from the World Tree. This week in part 4 of our camping series, we wrap it all up by sharing how to pack, clean, and recover from your camping excursion. And now, on with the show.
Yes, I see. Good news, everyone.
Part 4. It's been a good series, but I guess all things must come to an end, right? So,
I mean, we've been talking about this for a month now.
It's true.
And people are still kind of tuning in. So thank you for everybody that stayed.
Yeah. All right. News this week. So I have been reading Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. This is the guy that wrote The Martian. I say I've been reading it. Technically, I've been listening to it on Audible, but it's kind of an interesting concept. It's kind of a trope that's been done a few times, but it's a pretty fresh take on it. Basically, there's this guy who goes on like a desperate last chance mission to save Earth and all of humanity. He's the only, so he wakes up, with no memory. His crewmates are all dead, and all he knows is that, like, he's been asleep for a long time. He figures out that he's on a ship, and like his memory kind of slowly returns over the first several chapters, like the first half of the book. And it's kind of interesting because it's kind of like a mystery where you're watching him put together the clues of who he is and what happened. It's also like that really technical sci-fi that The Martian did really well, where it's like accurate science and stuff. So it's pretty cool. I would recommend it.
Nice. I actually haven't read anything by him, but his name keeps popping up with different Reddits that I'm a part of and different forums that I go on. So
have you read The Martian or seen the movie? No, you should put those on the list too.
Okay. For sure. Yeah.
And then speaking of movies, well, I guess this isn't a movie, it's a mini series, but my wife wanted to watch this one called Outer Range. It's kind of weird. It's an Amazon Prime show. It was produced by Josh Brolin, who, if you're not aware, played Thanos in the Marvel movies. He's also the main character in this one. And it's kind of like a science fiction Western mystery. It's really interesting. There's only one season. They kind of leave it open-ended. Not the best TV series I've ever watched, but definitely entertaining and a good head scratcher if you're into that kind of paranormal, like, what is reality actually, and, you know, stuff like that. So basically he's a rancher in, I want to say, Wyoming, and he discovers like a mysterious black portal on his land, but I don't want to give too much away. So if you're looking for something to watch, maybe not too bad.
Sci-fi Western sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's an interesting combination. So,
I mean, didn't Will Smith kind of do that when they redid the Wild Wild West?
Yeah, I don't know if that was sci-fi as much as like steampunk, but
yeah.
I think the best sci-fi Western is still Firefly. Still bitter about that.
That is by far one of the best sci-fi series that I've watched. Yeah. I love it. I think The Mandalorian did a good job with kind of the sci-fi Western style.
Yeah, it did. I would agree.
But yeah.
And then my news for this week, nothing too crazy. I did see a story. I want to say this was yesterday. So the game Wordle, if you are familiar, which I think most people are, has kind of been taking the world by storm. And with a little bit of JavaScript inspection, you can actually see the word list. So if you want to go out and spoil it, you can. But so with being able to see the list in advance, the internet noticed that the solution for yesterday was changed. And the New York Times, which purchased the game, said that they pushed it out 5 years into the future due to a, quote, major recent news event. The word of the day, the solution for the puzzle of the day, was the word fetus, which doesn't take too far of a leap to realize that they're talking about the news that the Supreme Court may be considering overturning Roe v. Wade. So all of that whole mess aside, on what your thoughts on that decision are, I was curious to hear what your thoughts are on this practice of changing things like game content, movie releases, etc., in response to current events. Like, is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is there a line at some point where we have to stop being reactive in all of our entertainment? What do you think?
Before I answer that question, and I'm very glad you didn't ask me what I thought about the Roe v. Wade overturning, because that's probably like a 2-hour podcast in itself about the selfishness and stupidity of some of the elite in this country.
Yeah.
So, no, I went into work yesterday and came in, and me and one of my coworkers, we always sit down at the first thing in the morning, and I'm like, ask each other if we got the Wordle puzzle. And how many tries it got. And she said, oh, today's was hard. It took me 5 tries. And so I came in and I did it. I'm like, oh, I got it in 3. She's like, really? With your first word? And I'll give my first word. If you're interested, I use aisle, A-I-S-L-E.
Nice.
Hits some awesome vowels and some of the more common consonants. I'm like, yeah, how did you not get shine in 3? And she said, the word wasn't shine, it was fetus. I'm like, no, the word was shine. And so I would have missed it, if I didn't look it up, but because I guess if you haven't navigated away from the site and reloaded, you were still on the old list.
Oh yeah, she and had a
so,
cache.
And probably. So, like a quarter of the players actually had fetus, and those that navigate away from the tab, and then go back every morning, they got the word shine. And so it was just it was funny because we're like, what's going on? So sorry, funny anecdote about that whole thing. As far as that, I mean, something that's free entertainment, it's not behind a paywall. And with New York Times being a news agency, I think they made the right choice of trying to push it away. There's no point in like trying to, or even unintentionally stirring up trouble. I don't know.
Yeah.
It reminds me, going back, I grew up in Denver, the Columbine shootings, one of my favorite movies, Boondock Saints, came out about the same time and actually was pulled from theaters because of the violent gun violence in it and went straight to DVD, giving it kind of a cult upbringing. Because they were worried about triggering people. So, I mean, it was things like that, it's probably the right idea in my opinion. But at the same time, like as a consumer of entertainment, it annoys me to no end that like we can't separate the entertainment from the reality type of thing. You see it every time a Grand Theft Auto game gets released, like people will blur the lines between entertainment and reality, and it kind of it creates a bigger issue when you try to blur the lines. Like, so until we can figure out how to compartmentalize entertainment and what's going on, I think we do need to push things back just to avoid miscommunications and possibly causing pain to other people unintentionally. So sorry, yeah. Long-winded, but that's my answer.
Yeah. I don't know that there is a right or a wrong answer. I just was curious. I think that if they hadn't have done anything just with how inflammatory and divisive the topic is, I think that they probably would have faced quite a bit of backlash, probably from both sides, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand why they did. But like you said, it is kind of frustrating that society hasn't learned to separate and compartmentalize entertainment from reality, because it's unfortunate that things like movie releases and stuff like that are affected. So
it could just be the way my brain works. Like I do have a slight case of ADD, and one of the symptoms of that is hyper focus. Like I can compartmentalize because I do have like that partition built into my brain genetically, mm-hmm. or whatnot. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just the abnormal one, and like the blending of entertainment and reality is what everybody else deals with.
Maybe. Anyway, that was all I had for this week. So
there you go. So this week, as far as what I'm reading, I am going full on nerd, preparing for classes this fall. So I am reading my organic chemistry book and going over notes and trying to remember everything that I learned previously, because I have to finish up the O-Chem lab from like 5 years ago in order to finish my undergrad. So I am not looking forward to that. So looking at that. Yeah. Looking at advanced tree biology, and I just turned in an application with the Colorado Department of Agriculture as part of their ash borer study program. And so I've been looking at a lot of invasive species reports from across the nation to try and prepare for any interview questions that they might have if I move on to that third stage of the application process. So my reading has not been a lot of fun.
Nice. Well, I mean, not nice that it hasn't been fun. that came out wrong, but it sounds like, you know, it's, well, maybe not as entertaining. It's good information. So
yeah,
I know so one of the birch trees in our backyard has gone into some kind of a weird decline on like the main branch and like one half. And there's like a couple of other branches that seem to be thriving, and just to get somebody out to try and diagnose it, to get an arborist out, was like, I want to say $400 just to come and like say, okay, this is what's wrong. But if we wanted them just to come and see what it would take to yank it out, it was free.
Yeah.
Which is annoying. So
diagnostics
are always good hard. Money.
I don't know, the way you explained it with half the tree thriving and the other half not, what I learned when I was taking a horticulture class a long time ago, sometimes when new houses are built, and they plant the trees. They're planting trees just to plant them to make them look good so that you can sell them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes because a tree root, when it's cut, will grow 90 degrees from that cut, and it won't stop unless it's cut or hits another wall. And what happens is if it was cut off the tree farm and a root went out 90 degrees from it, as the trunk grows into that root, the root can actually constrict resources, water and resources on that side of the tree.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, there's nothing you can do at that point. That side of the tree is dead.
Right.
But it's a very common problem, especially with deciduous plants such as birch, elm, ash, those type of things.
That might be what it is, honestly, then, because I mean, I looked at it. I didn't see any holes from like birch borers. Didn't really see any evidence of like fungus or anything. So,
yeah. Anyway. So it just sounds like a bad planting practice from the original planter.
Yeah.
So I just saved you $400. Take a look at it. See if it's doing that.
Yeah.
One of the signs of that, actually, for anybody that's listening that may have this issue with their own trees, any homeowners, is you'll see a bulge. Like if you look at the trunk, you'll see it go down like a normal symmetrical. And then on the side that is dying, you see it kind of bulge out almost like a bulbous growth. Like It almost looks like a cancer on the bottom of the trunk. And that is the return sugar. So the sugars from the plants, as they photosynthesize the light to turn it into sugar, it can't get down into the roots. And so it like pulls down in the bottom of the tree trunk. And that's kind of one of those like hard tells that you've got something going on in that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah. Colorado Department of Agriculture. If you're listening, I am very knowledgeable and you should hire me.
Sure.
Yeah. Sorry. What were you going to say before I kind of kept going?
I just was going to say, unfortunately, I don't know that it's going to survive. Like we'll see, but there's like one or two branches that put out new leaves. The rest of it is pretty much dead. So
yeah. If you catch it early enough, you can repair it. But usually once you have the canopy dying, it's a chainsaw and a stump grinder, unfortunately.
Yep. Anyway.
Yeah. So that's what I've been reading. And slight arbory lecture aside. So... watching this week marks the finales of the Eurovision 2022 Song Contest. And it is living up to the Eurovision campiness. I love every second of it. Have you ever watched Eurovision before?
I haven't. I was just about to Google it so I could pretend to talk about it with some semblance of knowing what I was talking about, but
all right.
Assuming it's some type of like performance and like tournament, I guess.
Yes. It's, I guess it's kind of like the, European soccer championship for pop songs. Hmm. Each country has their own tournament to decide who will represent their country in this European song contest. And they all submit, all the winners for each country submit their songs to a board. The board, like, they put it up on YouTube. You can watch them, you can vote on them, all of that. And then the best songs go into the semifinals. So the best countries go into the semifinals. And then they have stage productions where they have live shows where all these singer-songwriters, bands, weirdness come in and they perform in front of a live audience. And then the audience votes is worth 50% of the score. And then the judges make up the other 50%. And then the best songs in Europe, minus England, Spain, Germany, and I can't remember the other two, have to fight in a semifinal to get into the grand final. And then the grand final, everybody performs. And then the winner of the best song maker in Europe gets crowned. And so if you've seen the Netflix show Eurovision with Will Ferrell and Rachel Adams, maybe?
I haven't seen that one.
It's just a celebration of the craziness of this song contest. So, well worth it. Today, as we're recording, was semifinal number one. So, there were a lot of fun songs. A lot of people really took their singing seriously. And then you had a band from Lithuania who released a song for Eurovision called Eat Your Salad. And it is a pop song all about going green and why they walk instead of drive and ride their bikes and eat their salads instead of meat. And it is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but so funny. Oh, man. Norway had one called Give That Wolf a Banana, and it's a song about the big bad wolf trying to eat their grandma. So before the wolf can eat their grandma, they want to give the wolf a banana to make sure that they save grandma, type of thing. It's stupid fun. Moldova had one. It was Dropkick Murphys, like kind of a folk punk with a fiddle and a accordion that was amazing. And then Ukraine, honorable mention to them. They rocked it. They came out with like this traditional Ukrainian dress. It was a rap song. I don't speak Ukrainian. I didn't understand what they were saying, but there was just a lot of excitement, a lot of culture, a lot of fun in that one too. So if you get a chance, at least YouTube Eurovision Song Contest, and you can see some of the campiness that happens.
Yeah, it sounds pretty entertaining.
If you're in America, it's on Peacock. You can watch it on replay on Peacock or live if you happen to not work during the day.
Cool. Have to check it out.
Yeah. And then the last news. This weekend starts the beginning of the Highland season for me. So I'm driving out to Grand Junction and I'm throwing in my first competition of the year. So basically every other weekend from now until second week of September, I will be throwing something heavy somewhere across the Western United States.
Sounds like fun. What's out of curiosity, what's your favorite Highland event that you compete in?
My favorite Highland event is the sheaf toss. It's for those listeners that are in Scotland, I understand that you do not do this event in Scotland. Us Americans invented it so we could beat you at something in your games. It's basically you have an antique pitchfork in a simulated bale of hay. It's 20 pounds of like tight wrapped like hemp rope in a burlap bag. And the goal is to throw it up over a crossbar as high as you can. So simulating throwing hay up into a hayloft.
Yeah. That sounds like fun.
That's my favorite one. My least favorite is the caber. It's wily and hard, and I really dislike it. So
that one always struck me as very awkward. If you get the balance off by just a little bit, it kind of exacerbates it as you go forward.
It's easier than it seems. It took me a while. It took me about 5 competitions to figure out how to pick it. And the lingo, picking it, is the pick up off the ground. Okay. If you have the balance right at the get-go, you can pick it and catch it high, like up around your stomach instead of down around your waist. And the higher you catch it, the less you have to pull it in to keep it upright so you can actually run with it and whatnot. So I think that's the hardest part. And I have to say I got really decent of it when I was at the C level, which is the novice level. And now that I've gone up and I'm turning 7,500 pound cabers, or attempting to, like, I don't know, you go over 14 feet long tree trunk to 16 feet. And it's just hard to get enough momentum, forward momentum, to get that thing to go up over its end. So I don't know how the pros do it with the 16 to 20 foot logs.
But yeah, I don't know that that I could do it. It's seems very awkward. But it looks like fun.
It's fun. I still want you to come out to the Long's Peak Highland Festival in September and give it a try.
Just make sure there's a lots of clearance all around in all directions so I don't drop it on somebody. But
that one's good because the audience is has a chain link fence between you and them, so where the audience sits in the field. So even if you do drop it, it's going to hit the chain link fence.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
We shall test the strength and rigidity of the chain link fence.
We will get Adam out here one of these days. Maybe do a live show from the festival.
Oh, man.
So,
yeah, people will subscribe just to see me humiliate myself. It's all right.
That's what I thought the first time I tried it, but I don't know. It's fun. Everybody starts with like no experience, so.
That's true.
And I love the novice classes when I was first getting into it, because all the judges, they're all either pros or elite level competitors, past or present. And they give you a lot of points like, oh, if you haven't done this before, this is how you want to pick it. If I tell you to bell, listen to me. This is how you bell type of thing. They'll tell you how to put the tacky, which is a sap to keep your hands glued together. They'll tell you how to put that so that you can keep contact with the caber without actually making the caber like too sticky for other competitors type of thing. So just all the different tips and stuff. And it's really kind of a cool experience to try. So
nice.
Yet again, all you listeners out there, if you want to get into a very fun, unique, niche sport, go to a local Scottish-Irish festival and just try the athletics. Everybody there is excited to help you, excited to talk to you, and it's a group. It's a good time.
Yeah, sounds like fun. All right. Well, with that, I guess we ought to finally bring an end to this this multi-part series on camping. So
let's do it. So now that we have gone, been camping, it's time to pack things up and bring it home. Back when I was in Boy Scouts of America, there was a principle that was taught called leave no trace. And the idea is to leave an environment better than how you found it. Since it has become a nonprofit, and what they do is they raise money, leavenotrace.org, they raise money to go clean up problem sites and kind of create a return to nature type of thing. But we don't have to donate to this if we practice the principles of leave no trace. And the basic principles is, whatever you bring to the campsite with you, take it out with you. If you're at a reserve, like a reserved site, make sure it ends up in the recycle bin. Make sure it ends up in the trash bin. Make sure you're exposing of your human waste the way that it should be. Make sure that you're you're exposing of the waste, your black water tank in the RV the way that it's supposed to, where it's supposed to. Just leave the environment better than it is. So some of the things that people don't think about. Cigarette butts. These are everywhere. They take about 10 years to break down. And even when they break down, the filter is made out of microplastic. That microplastic could take 1,000 years to break down. Most cigarette butts end up in the ocean through wind and whatnot. Creates part of that Pacific ocean garbage patch that we have been hearing about forever. With it being Earth Day, this is kind of important to realize that, like, the cigarette butt, it doesn't just break down like you would expect.
It's more than just paper.
Yeah. More than just paper and ash. Fishing line, 600 years. It's usually a synthetic blend, usually plastic. A good thing that I'm seeing a lot of places do now, they have a filament receptacle at popular fishing places. If you have a snag and the line breaks and you have to, like, clean your reel or whatnot, they have a place to put all that fishing line, which makes it a little bit better. So just know 600 years to break down on Earth. It could be even more in a water environment with, like, the lack of soil to help with the breakdown process. Plastic bags, over 1,000 years. Again, same thing as the filters on your cigarette butts. These stick around for a long time, and it's such a thin plastic. Those things go airborne really easy.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that they're tied down. Make sure that you're doing those right. Styrofoam. I love me some Chick-fil-A. I love me. I love, like, certain fast food things. It hurts my soul that styrofoam's still a thing. This synthetic creation, as far as we know, doesn't break down. It gets smaller, but it doesn't break down. It's actually one of the toxins that a lot of ocean fish digest, and, like, one of the reasons why their meat is not safe for people who are pregnant. Like, you can't eat tuna if you're pregnant, and, like, things like styrofoam and mercury and all of that is this issue. So my suggestion, if you can avoid it, don't buy anything in styrofoam, period. If you're bringing it camping, make sure it ends up in the right place and you're not just leaving it out there for the next person.
And the campfire is not the right place.
No. For something that doesn't break down, if it ignites, do you really want to be breathing that?
Well, if, like, you've ever seen styrofoam burn, you know that it puts off this nasty, greasy black smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, nasty stuff.
So, ugh, memories. I have burned a fair share of styrofoam in the past. I think most
Boy Scouts did.
Yeah.
It looks cool when it's, like, bubbling and stuff. And, you know, 12, 14-year-old kids don't really know any better. These days, they probably do. We didn't.
I feel like it was more prevalent when we were growing up, though.
Yeah.
I feel like Chick-fil-A and maybe some gas stations are really the only places where I see styrofoam cups.
Chinese takeout. I see it a lot. Although where you are, most of them probably move to paper containers. Out here, they still have got the styrofoam, like, clamshell stuff.
Fair. I do see it on takeout containers. There's been a move in the Colorado Front Range to change it to reusable plastic takeout containers. And if it's not reusable, it's recyclable plastic.
Yeah.
So. Yep. Anyway, Wet wipes, 100 years. Cotton doesn't break down that easy. Even though it's an organic thing, it still takes a while to break down once it's been treated. Your tin cans, 50 years. Tin cans are kind of cool when you find them out in the out there. But know that most of the cans that you're bringing up aren't tin, and you should still not leave them.
Yeah.
Anywhere. Plastic bottles, 450 years. Again, we're not entirely sure that these completely break down. It is oil-based. Oil does not break down the way that other organic compounds break down. And so we know that it takes about 450 years, theoretically, for it to break down. But we don't know if that is actually breaking into the microplastics that, like, can get into our drinking waters, cause a bunch of issues hormonally with different animals and whatnot. Your cotton clothing takes about 6 months, a little more, a little less, depending on what it's mixed with. Again, try to bring home the clothes that you bring with you. Your synthetic fabrics, these are awesome. These are great. They're lightweight. They're great for hiking and all of that. They take 100 years plus, depending. I know we're no longer in the 80s, but the 80s are coming back. If nylon ever comes back, know that it is extremely flammable, and you don't really want to take it camping with you.
Yeah.
Period. Beer and soda cans, the aluminum, about 50 years. Don't throw them into a fire, though. They do... They kind of melt, they pop, they fizzle. It looks like they burn, but they don't go anywhere. Melting them does not get rid of them. It just changes how it looks, what it's composed of. And aluminum is one of those weird metals that it doesn't ionize. I don't know how to explain this. We'll just say that when it mixes with ash, when it's being burned, it leaches certain toxins into the environment that can end up in our water tables, which can cause a lot of problems, not just locally where the fire is, but like far away. And so just to be safe for both you, the animals that you're going out to hopefully see when you're camping, as well as the city down the stream or our neighbors down river, just it's not a good thing to throw beer cans, soda cans, anything like that in the fire. Pack it out. Aluminum is really cool. If you stomp on it, it gets really small and it's really easy to pack out.
Yeah.
Feminine hygiene. Tampons, pads, about 25 years. Diapers, disposable diapers, about 500 years. Your food waste, most of it is okay. Know that your meats, not only if you toss those in the camp where you're planning on camping, might attract things that you don't want to be in camp with you. Be careful how you dispose of those.
You might become the food waste. Right.
Meats and whatnot, I would throw into a trash can. If there's no trash can available, if you're going to be there for a little bit and your fire is in a safe place where you're not going to be attracting animals, if you have a cooking fire and you follow the triangle that we talked about with our... was it our spring hiking?
Yeah. Yep.
Thing. If you're not within the triangle, you can throw food waste onto the fire as a last resort for your meats. It will charcoal. It will turn back to carbon. It'll end up as ash. And that is not ideal, but it is an okay way. But still, rule of thumb, pack it out. If you're not going to eat everything, find a way to store it so that it doesn't create an aromatic, like, critter attractant. But yeah, pack it out. Know that your orange peels, banana peels, take a little bit longer than most to decompose, especially out here in the West. If you're on the East Coast, where it's a little bit more so, like, more organic matter in the soil, it's a little bit safer to leave food scraps, like, out there, just because it will break down. But also know, most processed foods do not do well with animals, and it's not ideal to leave it. So,
yeah, there you very go. Very good information.
Leave no trace, folks. Pack it out.
Yeah, and it's not hard to do. It's really not. Like, it doesn't take that much effort to bag up your trash and take it with you. You brought it out. You've got plenty of room to bring it back in.
Right. And after you've used it, it's usually smaller.
Yeah. All right. So you have broken down your camp. You have hopefully packed up all your trash and brought it back home again. If not, I will come haunt you. So after you get home and you throw your trash away, there's a couple other things that you want to check. So as far as yourself, your own person, depending on the area you've been in, you want to check for ticks. This is a lot easier if you have a partner that can check, looking like folds of skin, underarms, in your, like, in your groin, any of those warm, cozy crevices. You don't want to let one go untreated. Also, if you picked up any nicks, cuts, bruises, contusions, lesions, any minor first aid that you had to do in the field, give it a good cleaning, if nothing else. If you clean it with nice soap and clean water, get all the dirt out, looks okay, you know, no biggie. If it's maybe looks a little bit red or like it might be getting infected, keep an eye on it. Field first aid is kind of messy and not very sanitary, so just recheck when you get home. Sunburns are a very common thing to come home with after a camping trip, so break out that aloe vera gel and treat the sunburns. It you'll feel better, and it'll help in the long run. And then the last thing, as far as stuff to check for yourself, if you got like a nasty cut, or if, you know, maybe you encountered an animal and you tried to get too close to it, just if you need to get like a tetanus shot or rabies, if you're worried about that, now is a great time to follow up on that with your doctor. It's not going to hurt anything if you weren't exposed, but if you were, you don't want to end up with lockjaw or any of that stuff. So then gear. Oh, sorry. Did you have something to add?
Nope. I was just saying, right, better safe than sorry.
Yeah, it's a good policy. So then as far as gear, you want to check your gear when you get home. If it's dirty, which it's more than likely going to be, you probably need to wash it. If it's just a little bit dusty, if you're doing some desert camping like I did where I used to live, you can just sweep out the sand. But if it's got muddy, or if it's got like other nasty goop on it, give it a good washing. Most camping gear is fine to use like a mild detergent. If it's wet, if you ran into some rain, or if you wash it after you get home, just make sure you let it get really dry, like completely dry. There's nothing worse than packing up your tent or your sleeping bag, pulling it out the next time and finding that it's full of mold and mildew. And I mean, let's be honest, camping gear is not super cheap. So a little bit of time and elbow grease now could potentially save you quite a bit of money down the road. As far as washing sleeping bags are a pain to wash. So what I do, and has worked fine for me, if they didn't get anything on them other than like maybe a little bit of sweat during the night, I just turn them inside out and I hang them out in the sun. That lets them air out and dry. Also, the UV from the sun will kill pretty much everything that's on them. I've never run into issues. But if they get any other like bodily fluids, I don't want to be crass, you want to wash them like in a washing machine. If your washing machine can't handle something that big and heavy, just go to a laundromat and use one of the commercial ones. And then it's always a good idea to check your vehicle, not just after a camping trip, but after any long trip. Just basic stuff. Check your tires, check the fluids, check your suspension. You don't have to get super crazy about it. Just, you know, like crouch down, look at your truck or your car. If it's like tilting to one side or something, then take that to a mechanic. Tires, if you like increased the pressure for a trailer or whatever, you know, go ahead and let some air out so that it's back down to your road pressure. Just know that the miles you put on your car when you're camping tend to be a lot harder on a vehicle than on road miles. One other thing that just now came to mind, if you do a lot of camping in dry, dusty areas, it's not a bad idea to change your air filter a little bit more often, or at bare minimum, just pull it out, take a look at it, blow it off with some compressed air. And then just going back to the camp trailer thing, if you had been towing a trailer, just keep a close eye on your transmission. If you pull a trailer a lot, especially if you have an automatic transmission, that is one of the first things to fail on your truck. So check your transmission fluid, get a little bit on your finger and like kind of rub it till it's a nice thin film, and then hold it up to the sunlight. If you see anything sparkling, anything that looks like glitter, take it to a mechanic immediately, because that could be a really bad sign. Basically, those are little bits of metal that are in the transmission, and they will continue to grind stuff up. And then just a couple other things that you might want to do before you store your gear at the end of your trip, things that I do. I have a couple of like totes or chuck boxes that we put our camping gear in. So I like to top off the stuff that goes in those boxes. Whether that's like paper plates, cooking oil, spices. I like to have a set of basic cooking stuff that just is always in those boxes, so I make sure that all that's topped up. If you have any refillable propane canisters, make sure you fill them back up. And then if you took any Dutch oven or other cast iron cookware, make sure you give it a good cleaning and re-season it if you need to. And I think that's a pretty good overview of everything you do when you get home. Can you think of anything that I left out? I'm sure there's something.
No, I feel like we hit it pretty good.
All right. That brings us to the end of our camping series. For mindfulness this week, I wanted to share a short passage from the book that I've been reading that will kind of help take us into our episode for next week. So this is from the book Rooted: Life at the Crossroads of Science, Nature, and Spirit. The author is Leonda Lynn Hoped. And the quote says, "Who among us has not heard it? The wolf of this beloved, damaged earth, beckoning us by name just outside our safe living room, demanding our own response. The strange and persistent furry pod knocking. We peek tentatively through the door, just ajar, and see that there is no road, no sidewalk, barely a trail, and that obscured by stones, by leaves, by an intimation of the remains of those who have walked before us upon the unyielding circle of life. In spite of it all, we long to walk this path, for we know that there is more than what has been given and named by the overculture, more than what we have been told is true, more than green gardens and nature calendars and recycling and a summer hike in the mountains and an occasional camping trip. More even than an hour-long forest bath, however lovely that sounds. We know that there is a wilder earth, and upon it, within it, a wilder, more authentic human self. We know the need of each, for the other is absolute. So, yeah, I was reading that, and that really spoke to me. It's something that we've both talked about before on this podcast, even like just talking about other books like The Hobbit, just that call to adventure, that yearning that like there's something waiting outside beyond the door, like just off the beaten path, that like desire to get out there and explore the unexplored. What about you? What did you think of that passage?
The more you share from this book, the more I really want to read it. And the analogy of the wolf outside beckoning your name, like the sense of mystique, like majestic beauty that also has a dangerous side. I feel like that is kind of what being outside is about. At least for me, like you can go where everybody else goes, but then are you really grounding yourself? Are you really like experiencing the true zeal of nature? And I know that's not what it all was, what this quote was at all. Well, maybe to an extent, like, but I don't know. I love the illustration, the way you can imagine like this wolf kind of beckoning you out of the comfort of your home into something that should be so natural, to go experience life at a level that you haven't really experienced it, or if you do, you haven't experienced it as much as you could, type of thing. And I really love it. And like you said, we both feel the call to nature quite often. I mean, call to adventure, Hobbit, Master and Commander, White Squall, like the movies, they speak to us on a primal level. So, yeah, it's a lot of rambling. I feel like I'm back in church where like the teacher would call on me and I'd be like, if I fill my voice with as many words as possible, people are going to think that I'm smart and I know what I'm talking about.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love that quote. And I really am planning on getting that book here soon. The things that you've been sharing with it, it's been amazing.
Cool. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Go ahead and join us next week, especially if that passage spoke to you. We're going to be talking about some small things that you can do to ground yourself in nature. Some of the things from this book, from the Rewilding book, and maybe some other sources as well. We'll see you then.
See you next week.